Welcome to Category Leaders, where we go inside the minds of executives and innovators shaping the future of B2B growth. I'm Eli Grisserfidi, co-founder of Maya Digital, where we help B2B companies and executives build LinkedIn authority and drive life-changing opportunities. On this podcast, I sit down with founders, CEOs, and C-level leaders who are redefining their categories, the innovators turning executive presence into pipeline growth, competitive advantage, and market leadership. If you are a decision maker looking to scale your influence, attract top talent, and position yourself as the go-to voice in your industry, you are in the right place. Let's dive in. Hello, and welcome to Category Leaders. I am your host, Eli Grisserfidi. Today, I am joined by Jim Carlo, author, professional speaker, and leadership expert with over 30 years of experience scaling organizations from early stage startups to industry leaders. Jim is best known for challenging the idea that leaders are made, not born. In his best-selling book, The Six Pillars of Effective Leadership, he lays out a practical framework for building high-performing teams and leading through real-world complexity and change. Jim brings a grounded operator-level perspective on what leadership actually looks like when growth, pressure, and transformation are on the line. Jim, it's great to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Eli, I'm just excited to be here, and thank you for inviting me to be on your show and share your audience with you.
Of course. So Jim, you've led transformations from startups to billion-dollar enterprises across healthcare, SaaS, and services. When you look back, what's a defining moment in your leadership journey that really shaped the way you lead today?
Oh, that's an easy one. So if you read my book, there are six pillars, and the non-negotiable one is integrity. And if you don't operate with absolute transparency and integrity, you can never build trust or loyalty with your team. And I learned it the same year I graduated college, and it changed my life. So the same year I graduated college, I ran for local city government in the small town I grew up in New Jersey. And I won, and I became the youngest city councilman that they ever had. And nobody's beat that record. I was 22. Before I was even sworn in, the city manager asked me to come and visit with him. And I sat down with him, and we just chit-chatted, and he congratulated me. And I had known him from the campaign and stuff like that, and from being in the town and growing up there. And then he said to me, "I want you to do me one favor." He said, "Every night when you lay down to go to sleep and you put your head on the pillow, before you close your eyes, I want you to ask yourself one question. And that question is, did I do anything today for my own personal self-benefit that was at the expense of another individual, group of individuals, or organization?" And then he went on and said, "If you answer yes to that question, before you can rest peacefully, you have to do two things. Number one, figure out how to unwind it. And number two, figure out how to never repeat it." I have asked myself that question every night since November 1983. And that has really guided not just my professional life, but my personal life. And what I've learned after writing my book is that these six pillars can guide any human, not even just somebody in business. I was invited to be on a podcast for stay-at-home moms. And the host called me and I said, "But I don't have anything in common. My book is about business leadership." And she said, "You're wrong. I read your book. And my moms have two problems. They don't know how to show compassion or empathy. And that's all I want you to focus on." And so from that meeting in City Hall to that podcast, it became relevant to me that what I've got here in this book is something that can help a lot of people. But that integrity thing started in 1983 and has really guided my life and my career.
I love that, Jim. And I love that you said that it really, how you see it also on the personal side and the professional side. And really, I agree with you. I'd love for you to tell me more about the book itself, the six pillars of effective leadership. So what are the pillars, right? You mentioned one of them, empathy. What are the other five?
So integrity, empathy, compassion, stability, focus, and the last one is humor. And everybody usually raises their eyebrows when I say that. And well, you didn't, but
I love humor. I'm not fazed by that. And I'm actually very happy that's one of your pillars. So yeah,
so
go on.
it's not, to me, humor is not about being the comedian at the water cooler at 10 a.m. telling jokes of all different types, like a stand-up comedian. To me, humor is used specifically and strategically. If you go back in history and look up anything that anytime Ronald Reagan, a former US president who's now deceased, spoke, he always started with a funny story. And so when I kick off a meeting, I usually say something that's a little humorous. I mean, I'm not a comedian, but I also use humor to diffuse tense situations, to redirect conversations back to the agenda, to kick off meetings, or any time where I think we're getting too wrapped around the axle and tensions are starting to increase. And it has been highly effective for me, highly effective.
Yeah, I'm sure you've also not only on a personal level, but from your background, you are a sales leader. That's what you've been doing for many, many years in your career. And I'm sure, creating, I myself am a founder. I myself am, doing high stake deals with others and being able to create that relationship, use humor, defuse is one of the words that you mentioned. How do you see that play also on the sales aspect?
So first, I have to say that in today's society around the world, we have to be very careful about humor. If you go back 20, 30 years, you could pick on somebody's hairstyle or hair color or whatever. Today, you can't because everybody's so hypersensitive. And so when I talk about humor, it's usually self-deprecating humor, something stupid or funny that I did that makes me humanizes me to others because they can look at me and say, wow, that was really stupid. He did that. I've done something similar to that, right? And it really creates that bond and that trust, even in a sales situation. So I try to, it's funny, it's not funny, but it's interesting when I go out with salespeople and we get in front of a customer and the salespeople have their agenda and they want to go through it and they want to make sure that they impress the boss. And I literally stop that and just say, let's have a conversation. And Eli, how's the family? Tell us a little bit about what you do on the side and just really get to know the people and build that trust. Because today, people buy on trust more than price or features or functionality. And the reason is, if you think about history and you think about technology evolution, there's been a lot of companies that have come and gone because they didn't have a solid product and people were selling vaporware. And the dot-com era came. People can't afford to make a purchasing decision mistake. And when you're talking about contracts that are 10, 20, 30, 40, $50 million or more, somebody's betting their career on your solution. And if they don't have that level of trust, you're not going to be successful at winning that business, regardless how good your product is or how good your price is. It goes back, I truly believe it goes back to trust.
I absolutely love the emphasis that you put on trust, Jim, because we are 100% aligned, me and you on a personal level, and also my company, Maya. What we do is on the basis of trust as well. My co-founder coined the term trust to business. So we all know B2B and B2C. So we call it T2B, trust to business. So we really see the foundations of relationships, of sales, of hiring, or whatever it is going forward, especially with AI. You mentioned before humanizing, right? It all starts from the humans and from the people and from the trust and the relationship. And that's something that takes a lot of time. So in our world, we do it specifically on LinkedIn and the trust that you're able to build with your audience, with your future employees, with your customers, with your partners, with your organization, from a personal level, from a company level. So I agree with you going forward. It is already imperative, and it only going will continue to be increasingly important, especially with where we are going into 2026 and another moment and forward.
And I think that's why integrity plays a big role as well, because I think worldwide, I think we've gotten away from integrity. I think we've gotten away from integrity in dealing with others. I think we've gotten away from integrity in our political systems internationally, not just in the States. And I'm not talking about current administration or back. I mean, I'm talking about individuals, right? Individuals who serve others. I think we've gotten away from that. And I think that's one reason why my book is resonating so much with everyone, because everyone, one of the number one reasons people quit their job is because they don't trust leadership and they don't trust their manager. And SHRM, the Society for Human Resources, did a study and they listed the top 10 reasons. And seven of the top 10 reasons all have to do with the leader. And the cost to replace an employee is anywhere from one time or two times salary of the person who leaves. So let's take, for example, I'm going to use round numbers because I like simple math because I'm not a math major. But if you have a 500 person company and 50 people leave and the salary and benefits add up to $100,000, it's going to cost you two times that salary or $200,000 to replace that employee, get the person trained, and get the productivity back to what you lost when they walked out the door. That's $10 million to the bottom line. The attrition rate in the United States alone averages 10 to 15%. My attrition rate, now the company I'm leaving, the attrition rate is 12%. You know what mine is? It's under 5. I've never had an attrition rate of any team I've managed that was over 5%. Voluntary attrition. That's a very low number.
That's incredible.
And it's because I build trust and people will follow trust and their cycle, and they have to feel psychologically safe as well. And this framework gets you there because everything that I've talked about is not theory. It's simple application of human aspects of how to deal with others.
So let's dive a little bit into the framework itself. Is there any one of the pillars that you see typically underdeveloped when you come in to the leadership team, to the C-suites, and what are you doing with them to help really improve it and operationalize it?
So in terms of the pillars, the way I came up with the six pillars is I went back and made a list for everybody that I mentored over the last 25 years. What were the common things that they were lacking? And I had a list of about 15 items, but the common ones were the six that are in the book. And it's because they don't teach that in school. Harvard, Wharton, Brown, they don't teach compassion. They don't teach empathy. Nobody gives you a certificate in humor. I mean, it doesn't exist. And so what we do in companies around the world is when a manager position opens, we typically take the best technical person we have, the highest performer, and we say, Eli, you're now going to manage the team that you work on. So now overnight, you've become their manager. And just last week, you were having drinks with them at happy hour. And nobody gave you a roadmap for how to do this. They just said, hey, we're going to make you a manager, give you a pay raise. Good luck. Let us know how we can help you, and gave you no tools on how to deal with people. And that is something I have seen consistently. And so when I started thinking about retirement, I thought I can give something back by putting a framework together from what I've learned from mentoring people. And that's how those six pillars came up. And compassion and empathy, it's not something you can teach. You have to practice it. And so in my workshops, we do role-playing and we do a lot of role-playing, and we think up and I don't go in with a set of examples. I'll ask the people, tell me a time when you didn't notice that an employee was having a problem at home or was having this or having, and then we role play those items with each other and we learn as we do it. And then that practical application in the workshop, they can leave with that framework because they've tested it.
Nice. So tell me more about your mantra. The leaders, you spoke about it now, seeing really there are things that you have to be taught, right? That leaders aren't born and they're built. So when you're walking into a room, you're meeting the team, you're meeting the executives, what's kind of the first thing that you look to understand, who they are and how you can help them?
So that's a great question, and I am so glad you asked it. The mistake that most leaders make when they walk into the team for the first time is they start talking about what they're going to change. That is the last thing that a new leader should do walking in. The first thing a leader needs to do is introduce themselves, let them know who they are as a leader and what to expect, but then to sit back and listen. No leader can walk into a new environment, no matter how successful. Now, I have a standard sales playbook, but it has to be adapted for every company you go into. I can't go in and say, okay, on day two, we're implementing this, because that structure may not work exactly the same way for that organization because of the technology stack, because of the product or the customers they're serving or whatever. So as a leader, if I don't go in and understand what's working, what's not working, where the problem areas are, I can't evolve it. And that's the mistake most leaders make. They think that they have to go in because they now have this leader tag on their shoulder and they have to do something right away. No, they have to build trust right away. And that's the first thing they have to do. And you do that by listening, communicating, and learning about the people that are on your team. On my team, my direct reports, I know how many kids they have. I know what they do on weekends. I know. And whenever we have a one-on-one, we always start with how's the family? We don't start with what sales did you do yesterday? We start with how's the family.
Yeah, I can say the same thing. So we're my company, it's me and my co-founder, and we're a team of 10. And I can say we're very proud that the employees that we started bringing on 3 years ago, or maybe even more than 3 years ago, are still with us till today. So very, very high retention rate for them being us as well. And I can say that one of the things is very much what you said, because we hear it from them. We're on their level. We focus on them as a person and their families and their needs, and really starting out on how can we connect on that level and giving them the sense that we are there for them, and then being able to build that trust and continually, what we're doing and any changes that we have are ideally for, their better. So I think that's really is, the right approach, rather than just coming in and making changes that you think are correct. The leader should, actively listen. I think that's something that you said several times throughout the conversation, listening. And it's really, there's the employees, a client, or even a friend, right? How important is really listening? And
Well, and
sometimes it's overlooked.
I'll give you an example. I went to work for a technology company in the late 90s, and it was a husband and wife who owned the company that wanted to improve the company so that they could sell it. And I came into the company, and the CEO, who was the husband, said to me, "I want you to fire the entire sales staff." He said, "They're not selling, they're not motivated, and I want them all gone." And there was a sales staff of eight. And I was responsible for sales, marketing, and account management. They also had a client retention problem. Well, the client or account management area was a responsive unit, not a proactive unit. So we immediately made it a proactive unit doing outreach to customers on a frequent basis. And we took the retention rate from under 70% to 95% in 6 months. That was the first thing. In terms of the sales force, I only got rid of one person. And that was an underperformer, a real underperformer that showed that they were consistently underperformer, and it was probably someone I would probably wouldn't have hired. Everyone else, I remotivated and refocused them, and sales went through the roof. I made a lot of money. I mean, it was like printing money. And I went into work one day, and it was in my second year with the organization, and the CEO came into my office with my contract. And he said, "You're making too much money." And I said to him, "Larry, look what we've created. You're at near 100% retention. Sales are through the roof. He said, yes, and I'm not paying you your commission anymore. And he ripped it up in front of me. It was a privately held company, employee at will. He wasn't firing me. He said, you're just going to get your salary moving forward. And the reality was, his company financially was not attractive to any buyers. But more importantly, prior to me, he ran sales, marketing, and account management. And that turnaround, he took personally and felt that I made him look bad. And so what ended up happening is I was gone in 3 months because I was not going to work under those conditions. And so he wanted to throw a party for me because of all I've done. I said, Larry, I'm not going to any party that you throw. If I have to go to a party, the people are going to know what you did and the reason why I'm leaving. I said, I don't think you want that. He says, well, we're still going to have a party even if it's without you, because I want to make sure everybody knows I appreciate what you've done. And I mean, it was just, there was no integrity there. I mean, that behavior exists in people. And anyway, I don't know how that popped into my brain, but it did. And so I just thought I would put it out there. But that's why you can't just walk in and do things, because you may have gotten poor information.
No, it's a great point. As we look to wrap up, Jim, I do have one of our last questions. For the founder, the C-level, the VP who's listening, maybe feels stuck with their team, their team's plateauing, firefighting, retention, they need to do something different. And especially after listening to this episode, they understand that they should be doing something different. What's one practical exercise or mindset shift that they can do to put into practice this week and really start changing the way that their lead and their organization functions?
Yeah, I would say this to an experienced leader as well as an up and comer. And I would say, if you're not leading with integrity and transparency, start that immediately, because otherwise you can't build that trust. The compassion and empathy, when you go to try to show that as you develop that capability, will not be felt internally by the employee because you haven't built that trust. So the first step, as it was in my career, was integrity and realizing the importance of it. Now, if you're a publicly traded company and you're selling the company, you can't tell the employees that, because somebody's going to leak it to the stock market. So there are some things that, from a transparency perspective, you can't tell employees. However, for the day-to-day stuff, you should be an open book. And I always tell people, if I know something, you're going to know it. Except if it's in something that has to do with the organization or the future of the organization that would negatively impact everybody, or not impact you, but impact others, you won't get that from me. But other than that, if I know it, you'll know it. And I think that's the first thing that people should implement, regardless whether they're new or experienced.
I love it. This has been a really, really inspiring and thoughtful conversation. There are a lot of things I'm happy to know as a leader myself. Great. I'm on the right path, right? You have a lot more experience. You've seen a lot of different situations. And I think really, whether it's a new leader or founder or executives who's, starting out or even experienced one, I think there's really a lot of things that can be taken, like we said in the beginning of the episode, not just for our professional careers, but also our personal ones and how we are in our day-to-day with our friends and our families. Happy holidays, Jim. I really appreciate the time here. It's been really great. For anyone who wants to listen, to go deeper, bring you in to speak, which is something that you do a lot, or your coaching programs, or even your book, where can they find you? How can they connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I am on
Yes,
Instagram,
LinkedIn.
Facebook. But the one thing you can always do is go to my website, which is simply my name, jimcarlo.com. And it's going through a rewrite as we speak, so that I'm changing the coaching programs for January. And there'll be some programs that you can actually download right from the website, outside of the immersive program, which has to be interactive. But some things that people can do for a lower cost on their own. So look for that in January. But yes, so that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Great. All of those links that you mentioned and the new programs from your website, once it's out in January, we will make sure to have them in the description of the show with so anyone who comes to it can find you, Jim. Thank you, and good luck with your book and the next any new books and anything else coming up.
Eli, thank you, and have a happy and safe holiday.
You too. Thanks for listening to Category Leaders. If you are a B2B founder, executive, or leader with a story worth sharing, I'd love to have you on the show. Head to categoryleaders.team-maia.com to apply. Found value in this episode? Here's how you can help. Share it, take a screenshot, post it on LinkedIn, or send it to someone who needs to hear this. And if you know a leader who should be featured, tag them. I'd love to connect. Please subscribe to Category Leaders so you don't miss the next conversation. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn or visit team-maia.com to learn more about what we do. Thanks for being here. See you on the next episode.